welcome into another edition of the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, John Osier at the Hyundai Studios at the Miller Electric Center in Jacksonville. Bucky Brooks in Los Angeles on a busy, busy week. Bucky, good afternoon.
What's going on, guys? How we doing?
I think for Bucky, this week is like, you always hear when presidents lose their office or when kings lose their throne and they miss the adulation when it's over. For Bucky, after the combine is that. He's lost. He's driving around. He's drinking coffee without anything in it. Just black coffee from McDonald's. Just wandering around Los Angeles looking for adulation.
Just wandering around after being the king of the combine. Just coming back in just normal civilian life again.
That's right. You have to know how we all walk now.
Yeah. Welcome to our world.
That's right.
Bucky.
I dig it.
Let's start with the Jaguars' cuts, the reports coming through over the last couple of days. Starting with Foley Fatakasi, that'll save the Jaguars $3.5 million against the cap. And then continuing right around the deadline for the franchise tag, there was some news of cuts on Tuesday. Rayshon Jenkins, a safety, saves about $5 million. And cornerback Darius Williams saves about $11.5 million. They had to make some room. So some veteran names, Bucky, are apparently no longer going to be with the Jaguars. Jenkins made some big plays around here, obviously, in big moments. Darius Williams had a really good year statistically last year in passes defensed. And then Foley Fatakasi was injury-plagued for a couple years, had a big free agent contract. So, could there be more? What do you think of the three that got it started in the cuts?
No, I mean, you may see a few more that kind of are on the horizon, and it have less to do about the salary cap and more to do about just kind of positioning yourself for some of the signings that are on the horizon. When you think about the three guys that we're talking about, like all defensive players, you talk about Fatakasi at the point of attack. He just wasn't available enough, didn't make the impact that you would expect based on the compensation. So you can see that one. I think the ones in the secondary are a little more hard for maybe the fan to understand, because Rayshon Jenkins made a ton of plays, was an integral figure, a chief figure in that defense, one of the leaders of the defense, had a lot of splash plays that are kind of tied to his resume. And so when you see him move on and you see Darius Williams move on, who played pretty well, a lot of that might be due to the schematic shift that we will see from the defense as Ryan Nielsen comes in and kind of puts his stamp on the unit. You may see bigger corners on the outside, guys that are really comfortable playing press coverage, being real nose-to-nose. And then at safety, you have a situation where you sign, like, and I'm not saying they're necessarily the same, but you signed Wingert a year ago. You have Cisco playing. You have Antonio Johnson, who appears ready to take on a bigger role. Sometimes those circumstances can lead a veteran to be forced out, despite playing well and having a number that kind of matches some of the production that he brought to the table.
Yeah, and I think the reality is, I think Darius was mostly about scheme fit. Also, Darius was really good. He had picks, but he gave up a lot of plays too. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not sitting here trying to cut on him, but I think he was good, but not irreplaceable. But when you sign guys in free agency now, when you sign second contract players from other teams, mm-hmm. The lifespan is 2 or 3 years with that next team usually. It's not usually going to be a 6-year marriage. To me, Rayshon followed the plan that you want. You sign mm-hmm. a guy in free agency. He gives you 3 good years second tier. He bridges you to Antonio Johnson. I think the thing with Darius that you would rather have, you have him coming in for 2 years. You would like to know where that next guy is. I think they would have liked to have one of these corners that they had drafted more visibly ready to step up. Mm-hmm. Fatakasi, I think, just didn't play that well. I mean, I think that was more mm-hmm.
when he was out there. Yeah, he didn't.
Yeah, but he was out there. I mean, produce. So I think it was more that. Ideally, you would have liked to have signed all these three guys. I think ideally they would have liked to have drafted a couple of guys where other veterans that they had signed in the last 2 or 3 years were maybe more expendable. But they're not at that point right now. But you don't sign. I mean, I get a lot of questions when these kind of releases happen. Oh, terrible signings. You can't even keep these guys. Well, usually if you look around the league, the lifespan for most players is 4 or 5 years with first team. They go sign a second contract. They play 2 or 3 years on that. And then usually that means they're 28, 29, 30. And the rare guy is the guy who's playing at a core contract level beyond that. So these to me made sense. The question is, do you have guys on the shelf, so to speak, to replace them?
Yeah, that's the big thing. And you're right, John, when you talk about the guys in the back end, they were viewed as bridge guys that would kind of veterans that would come in, kind of give you performance for 2 or 3 years, but you're hoping that you draft guys that could eventually replace them.
Well, that's Antonio. So this, Antonio's the formula.
That's how it's supposed to work.
I wonder about corner.
Yeah, Antonio Johnson definitely looks like he's ready to take on a bigger role, whether that's like as a full-time nickel, whether that's moving back into the starting lineup as a safety. He looks primed and ready going into the second year to be a guy that's a major contributor. At cornerback, now it's the conversation, do you feel good about the guys that you have there? Do you feel good about Buster Brown being a guy that can develop and get onto the field? Or do you feel like it's time to go and draft another one based on how you want to play and who matches up? The other thing that you have going is you have Tyson Campbell, who is entering the last year of his deal. What is he going to be? Is he going to be a legitimate number one corner in this game? Can he play at that level? Or do you have to think about who are we going to bring in to be the heir apparent for him on the other side? So there are a lot of things at play. Some of this will be solved in free agency, but a lot of it will be resolved in the draft.
Yeah, I'd be surprised, JP, if they – I know they like Braswell. I know they like him a lot. But much like the Cooper Hodges story on the offensive line, did he play enough to make you think, okay, we're going forward with this, or do we have to make sure that we have an option if he's not? I don't see any way in the world that they don't spend equity on two corners in the next, what, 6 weeks, whenever the draft is.
Yeah.
Be that two high corners, a free agent, because I don't know that you're moving forward with Trey Herndon. Antonio Johnson's not a nickel. He's going to be a safety. Mm-hmm. So
the other guys are young and don't have a lot of time on task.
Yeah, I'd be a little nervous if they don't have two high equity corners either in free agency in the draft, meaning day one, day two draft, and
early free
a little
agency.
Bit of cash in free agency, yeah. Because that's their hole right now. Mm. But that, and again, Bucky, that sort of makes sense, because if there was a philosophical change that happened in the last 2 months, it's been how they're going to play cornerback, right?
Yes, and so it makes sense that you clear the decks and let's stockpile the defense with the kind of players that the defensive coordinator believes he needs to have this scheme get up and going. He talked about being more of a press coverage guy, a guy that wants to play nose to nose to take away the layups, but also taking away the deep shots. And so typically your best bump and run corners are long because the length kind of frustrates wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. They're athletic because you got to be able to run no matter what we talk about. If we can mask it and saying they're playing zone coverage, if it's quarters, if it's some form of the old Seattle Seahawks defense, it's man-to-man on the outside. And so you got to be able to hold up in coverage. And so you need to be athletic. You need to be quick with your turns and transitions. And I would say that looking at what we currently have, I absolutely believe the Jaguars would be aggressive in trying to upgrade the guys, because you talked about two high-end corners are certainly necessary, because you got to have three corners to really play effective defense in this league.
This is the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, John Osier, Bucky Brooks, and other news this week. Obviously, the franchise tag deadline was March 5th, and outside linebacker Josh Allen got the tag. The tender is $24 million. That means it's linebacker money for him. The deadline to make a long-term deal is July 15th. If it doesn't get done by then he would play on that $24 million number for the season if he is to sign the tender. And consider that he's made just over $33 million total in his first five seasons. I would consider yesterday a significant day if you're pretty much guaranteed at least $24 million to play football next year. Either way, the negotiations will continue, and Bucky, there's all kind of fan angst and things out there for most things these days. It's kind of how it goes, but there's what does this mean for the future of Calvin Ridley is what a lot of people are talking about. And why couldn't they get the deal done with Josh Allen before the deadline so they could tag Ridley? And there's all these different ideas about how the scenario went down. At the end of the day, Josh Allen is the guy that was drafted here in the first round early, who's worked his way up, two Pro Bowls, had a career season last year. He was always the priority, at least to me. What do you think, Bucky?
Yeah, no, I think it's something to be said for that. Let's talk about Josh Allen first. The reason why you franchise him is because you don't want to lose him. You are talking about a hefty raise for him. He's up to $24 million guaranteed. It'll be interesting to see what he elects to do with the tag, because once he signs the tag, it becomes fully guaranteed, and that is a lot allocated. Like, the thing that Jags can always do, you always remove the tag. And so it'll be interesting to see if Allen does sign the tag, that means he's kind of obligated to come in and do all those things that players on the contract are supposed to do, or will he wait until the very end of the negotiating period before he signs the tag and comes in and does what is required when it comes to that. With Calvin Ridley, the funny thing has been, like, Justin kind of looking at Jack's Twitter, the love-hate.
Don't do that, bud.
I
that's
can't.
That's a black hole, baby.
Wear sunglasses.
It's a black hole. And so the love-hate affair, because it went from, like, oh, he needs to go, to, oh, no, he's now the number one receiver on the market. His paycheck is going to be big. Is it worth retaining him? And then you're weighing Calvin Ridley versus what could be available in the draft. What I can confidently say is I don't think the Jaguars want to spend a first-round pick on a wide receiver. And so what you have to do is, when you're doing this exercise or scrimmage, you're looking at Calvin Ridley versus the players that could be available in the second and third round. Do you want Calvin Ridley, the experienced player who's near 30, who just put up 1,000 yards, or do you want what could be in a young player like maybe a Ladd McConkey, but who knows if he'll be there in the second, maybe a Ricky Pearsall from Florida, who knows if he'll be there, Xavier Leggett, and those things. The history hasn't been great for the franchise of late when it comes to drafting wide receivers. And so all of that goes into the equation when you're Doug Peterson, Trent Baalke, trying to decide how high do you want to go when it comes to the contract with Calvin Ridley. Because, look, he's a veteran player. You know what you're getting versus what is unknown in terms of a draft pick coming in.
How high would that be on an annual basis, in your estimation, for Calvin Ridley when he gets to the marketplace?
Well, the thing that I know, it only gets the price tag is only going up now that he's the only one. No T. Higgins, no Michael Pittman. Mike Evans is off the market. Like, he's the best one on the market, so teams that are desperate have to look at it. He's a much better player than Gabe Davis. And so we're talking about the numbers – maybe getting to the $20 million mark for a free agent wide receiver. I can't imagine him taking a discount. I mean, you talk about Mike Evans signing, what, 24, 25? Look, man, supply and demand. Supply and demand drives up the market. And so part of the reason why you want some of these deals done early is because you don't want the market to set the table for what you have to pay. And you get on the front end, sometimes you can avoid that. But now it's a precarious situation. If you're the Jags, how much are you willing to spend to retain Calvin Ridley?
Look, I've been saying for 2 or 3 months, I would want them to sign both these guys long-term, because I think Josh is an incredibly safe long-term pick that when you sign that guy to a deal and you put your head on the pillow that night, you know what you're getting. You're not going to worry. You're not going to worry. Is he not going to show up, et cetera, et cetera. All that stuff we've talked about. I also, back when in January, when the tone of the fan base was, why in the world would we sign Calvin Ridley? He ran that wrong route in Cleveland. I was saying at the time, look, you don't want to let that kind of production get out the window. And I've been consistent with that. Mm-hmm. I would have signed him. Devil's advocate with Calvin would be the opposite. And again, I would have signed him. I think he's a good, mm-hmm. good player. They weren't that much better offensively mm-hmm. this year after releasing a veteran or after letting a veteran, reliable guy that you could trust, Marvin Jones, go. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that was Zay Jones being hurt. I'm not going to say that Marvin Jones is the same player as Ridley. But mm-hmm. for that price of 24, is veteran that you know is a, you know, Calvin at times struggled with the routes. I mean, let's be, you know, so is there a little bit of, hey, we really like this guy at 18 or 19, but boy, that might be just a little bit much for us to pay when maybe we could go this other route, maybe make it work. I don't necessarily feel that way, but I could see that thought.
Yeah, and I'd be curious, and the only Calvin and his representation can answer this part of it, Bucky. I mean, you know, if they feel like they're in a place with a solid quarterback and a scheme that fits them that he already somewhat knows and can get better at in a new deal, does he take a little less to stay in a non-tax state? Would it kind of equal out in the end when the wash is all done? I wonder.
I don't think he'd take it less.
If it's that close. Yeah. I know it's all about money.
The ex-player Bucky got real quiet because Bucky ain't taking less.
I don't know about hometown discount. And the reason why I don't know about the hometown discount, because you've got to remember, like, fair or not, and whether it's direct or indirect, he has kind of been cited as the problem for a lot of the culprit for a lot of the Jaguars' offensive problems, right? Like, and for a player, no matter what we think, like when it comes to money and those things, like they bristle at the point of being pointed at and objectified as, hey, you're the reason why the offense isn't working. You don't know the routes and you're not doing this and you had some drops and all of this other stuff. And so now, because the leverage will flip, the leverage is now in Calvin's corner. How much is he willing to kind of give up off of that? You know, now that he is the number one receiver on the market and there are teams that are desperate looking for a receiver and the market is saying that a Mike Evans can get $25 million, so that might put him at $23 or $22 million when it comes to it. That's a lot. You remember, he hasn't played in 2 years, and so he missed a year and some change worth of salary. That's a consideration. So when we think about the hometown discount, me not knowing anything, I'll say, yeah, no, that's not going to be a consideration. It's going to come down to the bag, and it's going to come down to what the Jaguars want to do. And they can talk and say that. It'd be an issue. And here's where it's troublesome, because if you remove – let's remove Calvin from the equation, right? So now you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. Zay Jones can do what Calvin did. But Zay Jones has been beat up in the last 2 years. And so then it becomes a wide receiver core that is Christian Kirk and Evan Engram and a bunch of unknowns. And with a quarterback who's also about to get paid, how good do you feel if you're building this offense around Trevor Lawrence, trotting out Evan Engram, Christian Kirk, and a possible in Zay Jones? That's not necessarily a winning spades hand if you're a guy that likes to play cards. And so we'll see. We'll see if that works out. It also
depends on... It makes it a need if he walks out the door.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, it makes it a need. And then the other part of it comes, how confident are you in the coaching staff, in the organization, in developing young wide receivers? Who's the last wide receiver that's a homegrown product to pop in a major way for the Jaguars?
Oh, boy.
Allen Robinson.
Yeah, and then he didn't make it to a second contract.
And
Hearns for a couple minutes.
You make a strong argument the only two drafted guys
he wasn't drafted
are Blackman and Allen Robinson.
Okay, so I'm just saying, like, that's the reality. And so, like, so maybe some of the clearing of the decks is that you're going to have to bite down and just say, wow, hey, we're going to have to overpay for Calvin because we're going to pay for the quarterback. And so if you're going to pay for Trevor Lawrence, then you have to make sure that you give him everything. And so you have to take the money from somewhere. And normally the defense is the culprit when it comes to that.
Let's hear from Trent Baalke at the podium at the Combine, asked about Calvin Ridley and the status of the conversations.
We're not real concerned with that, whether it's a second or a third round. We're just going to work with the player and see if we can come to an agreement, whether that's before that compensation changes or not. That remains to be seen, but we're more focused on the player. Yeah, we're going to continue to have conversations with all of them. We've got a lot of work to do this offseason. You know, I had a meeting with Kelvin the other day in my office. I had a great talk with Kelvin. Know exactly where he's at, and he knows where we're at. So we're just going to continue to work with all these players and try to come to some form of compromise, some form of resolution as the weeks go on.
Well, that's the GM last week in Indianapolis, and hey, the clock's ticking here because the legal tampering window, if you will, starts March 11th, and then all of a sudden March 13th is the start of the league year, and then it's game on. And
yeah, I think what Bucky said, though, I mean, carries a lot of weight. Calvin's about to turn 30, but this is his second contract. So this, you know, it's not like he's an older player.
Yeah.
Like when Calais came in, he had already gotten a second contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is sort of, I mean, Calvin got paid as a first-round pick, but this is the opportunity. So if I was in a room with Calvin, I wouldn't be talking about hometown discounts.
Right, sure.
And if I was Calvin, I wouldn't give a hometown discount. I mean, I have a chance right now. I'm the highest paid guy. I mean, I'm the highest rated receiver going into free agency. This is the chance. This is what you dream of. This is what you work for. Think about where he came from. I mean, he doesn't come from money. Mm-hmm. So a chance to set up your family for the rest of their lives and for generations. Discount Schmitzcount.
Yeah, he's made $22 million and change over his career, including $11 million last year alone in the final year of his contract. So he could make that more than that annually moving ahead.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. What I said earlier, I think he's really important. I think he gave them last year a lot that they didn't have without him. I've said multiple times, I think there's bare minimum they don't beat Buffalo over there if he's not on the field. And I think there are a couple other games. I mean, a strong argument that he was the difference in two or three games. So how you replace that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And so here's where relationships matter. We can talk about the bag and all that, and it is certainly a function, but does Calvin feel wanted by the people in the building? Does he feel wanted by the general manager, the head coach, and the position coaches around him? What is that relationship like? Because that can have some sway when it comes down to, do I want to leave? Do I want to uproot my family and go elsewhere? Or do I feel like I've settled in to the community? I feel good about my teammates. I love playing with my quarterback and those things. And so I won't completely dismiss it and say that the bag is everything. Those relationships can matter when the negotiation is tight, but the negotiation has to be close enough that we're not talking about a significant chunk of change that we're leaving on the table just to feel good about playing in Duval.
Live like a VIP with a Daily's Place Blue membership. See the Dave Matthews Band, the Doobie Brothers, Parker McCollum, Two Door Cinema Club, New Kids on the Block, and so much more. And you'll enjoy guaranteed seats in the best locations, premium parking, and much more. Email ticketing at boldevents.com or call 904-633-2000. When we return, some pending free agents and maybe some possible rule changes that could affect some decisions. That's after this on the Huddle Up Podcast. Welcome back to the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, John Osier, and Bucky Brooks. And the Jaguars are celebrating their 30th season. And the time to get your 2024 season ticket membership is right now. Be at the bank for every touchdown and secure your seats at jaguars.com/tickets. Or call 904-633-2000. Well, there's a number of pending free agents for the Jaguars that you can still do business with up until they are free agents, March 13th, officially at 4 o'clock. You know, I'm curious, we've talked about, obviously, Ridley and Allen, and those are the two big names. A guy like Jamal Agnew's coming free as well, kick returner. And there's all this talk about possible kickoff changes, rule changes. There seems to be a little momentum, at least, whether it gets done this offseason or not, who knows. But I wonder how Bucky from – I'm going to ask the former special teams player slash coordinator here.
Mm-hmm.
Would that change how you approach pending free agents that you like, and especially in Jamal Agnew's case? That's one of the best returners in football already with the rules as they are if he has a chance. Well, in theory, he'll have more chances if the rules change to the XFL, air quotes, style of kickoff return. What do you think?
I think it's a significant development. If they're trying to bring back the kickoff return, it does change the way that you prioritize Jamal Agnew, because now the return game becomes another part of the offense. And the one thing that we do know is he's a Pro Bowl returner. We have seen him flip the field. We've seen him change games with a big return. You would like to think that given more opportunities, he's going to continue to do so no matter how it changes schematically between the lines. Being able to add that hidden yardage to an offense that's expected to be better going into the third year under Doug Peterson, yeah, that's a big get. And he also is kind of like what I call a bonus player. If you bring him back, you now not only get the bonus of what he does on kickoff returns and punt returns, but you get what he's able to do as a gadget player. We've seen him make some big plays on offense.
Yeah, I agree with all that. He's important. Often with returners, as they age, they can get lost in the shuffle in decision-makings like this.
Yeah,
I'm not saying this team doesn't prioritize Jamal, but this will be his what? He got here under Urban in 01. I mean, in 21. Yeah, I think it's 50-50 on this one. I think he's really important. He was hurt and out quite a bit this last year, been hurt a little bit. I don't quite know how that'll factor in. But as I said with Calvin, there are certain guys who give you impact. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure they beat the Colts without his return in week one. So how are you going to replace it if it's not here? I don't have a real feel. He makes a lot of money for a returner. So I think this is one to watch.
So now what you do is, so you're juggling. So you can't keep everybody, right? So we sat here and we made a case for Calvin. We made a case for Jamal. I would say you opt for Calvin over Jamal. You then look at Parker Washington. How good do you feel about his ability as a returner? Is he ready to be the next one? If he's not ready, who is maybe a young, cheap returner that we can kind of bring into the fold? Is there someone that you can draft and maybe you're intrigued by their return ability? If the kickoff return is going to be in play, it now kind of falls on the scouts to kind of dig deeper when it comes to the evaluation. Hey, are there any rookie returners that can come in and maybe give us an immediate impact given the new rules and the new more opportunities that these returners should face in the years going forward?
So obviously the timing of this is going to be of interest. Annual meeting is in, what, late March in Orlando. It might be too soon for then. There was the fair catch rule was implemented in May of last offseason where you could fair catch on kickoffs. It was a 1-year trial. So in theory, it could be done at some point later in this offseason. But then the draft's over by then. So, you know, like free agency opens before the next annual meeting, and then the draft is over before the May meetings. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of times you kind of get a feel for the winds, right? The winds kind of let you know, like, this is happening.
And yeah, you can get an idea about a rule like that.
Yeah, like it seems like teams are vested in this, that the league didn't like that the kickoff became a throwaway play. And so there seems like there's some momentum building that you want to bring the return back into the game. And so if you're going to bring the return in, you need to start thinking about, okay, how do we want to attack the return game? And it doesn't mean that, hey, that means that we're automatically going to sign Jamal Agnew, but it does mean, hey, when we're looking at the college prospects, the wide receivers and DBs and the guys who have return value, are there guys that we like? Because normally those things are evaluated by the special teams coach. Hey, give me a list of guys that you like in the return game. Okay, let's compare Jamal Agnew at this salary versus these young guys and what else you can add to the team by removing Jamal's salary. All of those things enter the conversation when you begin to do those evaluations.
Yeah, I hope I say this right, but some competition committee people told me a long time ago that the competition committee doesn't like rules that sort of make the game look different if you're watching it in a bar. Mm-hmm. You know, like with the sound down. And the kickoff return sort of being thrown out, when you're sort of just watching a game casually, it looks weird, right? Like it feels like you've taken something away from the game. So I think they'd like to get it back safer, you know, and find a better middle ground there for safety's sake than what they've had. So I do think they'll try to do whatever they can to get it back to where it at least looks like it used to. Yeah. I hope that made sense, but.
It does make sense because, like, I mean, you took a play that was such a prominent play. Obviously, as a former returner, I always appreciated the kickoff return. We have Devin Hester going in the Hall of Fame as one of the best to ever do it, and it's been removed.
Right.
And it's a huge play as an offensive play that you want to see some of those dynamic plays. I mean, shoot, we've been on both ends of it where we've had Jamal make big plays, and we saw the other team, the Houston Texans, take one back, and it changed the game. You want that to be a part of the strategy. You want that to be a part of the team building process. So hopefully they find a way to find a nice middle ground where they can bring it in while keeping the numbers down from a safety standpoint.
Yeah, I'd be curious too. Is there enough information on how it affects a game yet? I mean, there's XFL used it for 1 year, you know, and I think their season's about to crank up again. Do you kind of let them experiment with it one more time to get some more data on it, or does that even equate for you? I mean, maybe we're
for
digging
the NFL. They can always bring it in as one of those trial rules.
A trial rule, so. Right? That's possible, but you know, it's we're digging in the weeds.
Yeah,
now.
I think. Yeah, but I think there are so few returns.
Yeah.
They want that to come back. There are people that are like, I mean, the ball hasn't even been kicked, and you got the iron cross. You know, where people are just like
the Super Bowl had no returns,
right? 25-yard line.
No returns at all.
Yeah, I mean, we want to see the ball returned. We want to see some of that coming to it. It is a really exciting play, and there's nothing like having a big kick return that juices up the stadium and kind of gets the momentum going. We would like to see it. I mean, the casual fan, I would think, would even like to see that come back.
All right, upcoming schedule, Jaguars Happy Hour Radio tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Brian Sexton and Jeff Loggeman will have that for you on 1010 XL AM on Thursday. The negotiation window, March 11 through 13. The league year starts March 13th at 4 o'clock. The NFL annual meeting, March 24 through 27. The offseason program begins April 15th. The draft is April 25th through 27th. The schedule release probably in early May. That's the lay of the land, John.
Yeah, and the combine's in the rear view. Sorry, Buck.
It's all good. It's all good. Look, there's
what
a
will
lot
you
to
do
about.
Between now and next late February? Just hang?
I mean, there's a lot to talk about. The draft is until April, you know. And then, you know, my favorite time of year is the summertime where we got OTAs and minicamps. You
Love
know how important
Can't
that
wait.
Is.
Can't
you
wait.
You know how minicamp performance translates into regular season production. So I'm excited for all of those things that are ahead for us.
I already have my dry fits laid out for all minicamp access days.
And John's ready to chart throws and stats.
I can't wait. I got 4 notebooks, 4 dry fits, 4 dry fit shirts, and I am
– Big straw Sherry, hat.
I told Sherry, just stay out of the way, Sherry. I'm going.
Yeah, come on. Got to make that happen.
Bucky, we'll talk to you again next week. Appreciate it, as always.
All right, Buck.
Looking forward to it.
Bucky Brooks, John Osier, I'm JP Shadrick. Thanks to Joe Fortunato and Brent Reber. And thanks to you for listening to the Huddle Up Podcast.